Parshas Vayishlach. There's two major lomdish sugyas that everyone talks about in Parshas Vayishlach. If you're going to learn the parsha, let's say what we'll call pilomdis, there's two major topics that are discussed. One topic that's discussed is how was Yaakov allowed to marry two sisters? It's a Torah prohibition. How was he allowed to do it? So that there's numerous answers for. The other major topic that people discuss when they learn Chumash Apilomdis is the story of Shechem and Shimon and Levi. It's a very difficult story to understand from both a Hashkafic point of view and from a Halachic point of view. The question that we shouldn't deal with is what was Shimon and Levi's head to destroy an entire city? What was their basic premise on Jewish ideology that allowed Reuven and Shimon and Levi to do what they did? Where were they coming from? What was the justification? And what's even more interesting is the conversation that takes place between Yaakov and his two sons. Yaakov gives them a ganza musa shmuz, gives them a drasha, he gives them teichacha, and they end the drasha with one line. They tell the dad, yeah, dad, you know, I hear what you're saying, but hachazayna natas hachazayna, should we allow our sister to become a zayna? End of conversation. No follow-up. Right, where are all the lawyers there? No follow-up, no rebuttal, nothing. End of conversation. So what exactly is going on between Shimon and Levi and what was Yaakov's taina back? It needs a lot of explanation. The Rambam has a chiddush. The Rambam's opinion is that the people of Shechem deserved to be killed. The people of Shechem. Not just Shechem, the son. The people deserve to be killed. Why, says the Rambam? Because they didn't enforce laws. This is one of the things called Shevet Mitzvah B'Neinoich, all Goyim have to keep. And one of the Shevet Mitzvah B'Neinoich is Gezel. You're not allowed to steal. So what happened? This guy went and stole Dina, and none of the people in the city did anything. They allowed it to take place. So says the Rambam writes this Mefurish. From the fact they didn't enforce Shevet Mitzvah B'Neinoich, they were deservant of me. So writes the Rambam. What? One of the last of them is Dinim, and since they didn't enforce Dinim by punishing what they did for taking her, that's why they deserve to be killed. That's the Rambam Sheet. What?
The king, it's not a very
punish the people in the world. Yeah, you have to have enforced rules, right? Today we learned that even the president can get into trouble. Everyone today can get into trouble. So you have to enforce it. That's what the Rambam says. The Ramban disagrees with this notion, and the Ramban says you're only over Zayim Mitzvah B'Neinoich if you're kumva in kumvase, if you're passive, if you're active. Sheval tase, meaning by not doing something, taina the Ramban, you can't be held accountable for breaching Sheva Mitzvah B'Neinoich. That's the Ramban shita. So the kash is, if you hold like the Rambam, that the Shimon and Levi's motivation was dinim, so what was Yaakov so upset about? What do you say? We're following halacha. What are you getting upset about us, Dad? We're following what it says, that we have to enforce rules, and they're not breaching the rules. Why are you getting upset? So the Radvaz has a shtickle Torah that Yaakov said, no. They had Mila. They're no longer a goyim anymore. They had Mila. They took this Maisa Mila. So therefore, the Radvaz tied that since they had Mila, they became like Geirus. Zokt Radvaz, that since their Geirus counted, so they're no longer bound by the rules of Shemitz and Benayach. So, okay, so now what was Shimon and Levi's taina back? So they say Shimon and Levi's taina back wasn't an emissary Geirus. So machloikis between Shimon and Levi and Yaakov was the Geirus of the city a real Geirus, to the point to whether or not we can hold them accountable for things that they did. Rabbi Shawai says a Gavaldic piece over here.
The Geirus was, right.
So the question was, now they have a din of a Geir, now what can you do now?
That's right.
So Rabbi Shmuel says a gavaldik chap over here. He says, based on this, we can explain what Yaakov was so upset about. Because Yaakov Avinu was being samech on Geirus. Because how else was he allowed to marry two sisters? The Mashal says in Yuma, because Yaakov Avinu tied a Geirus and this guy can't shenayin l'dami. So the Geirus that takes place in this time in history had a din of a Geirus, because that's how Yaakov was allowed to marry two sisters. So now if Yaakov is right, that Geirus works, so then obviously that Shimon and Levi had no right to kill the people. So Yaakov's response to Shimon was, you're embarrassing me, not before the act that what you did, but the lumness that you gave off. Because if you're going to go kill them, so the statement you're making is, Geirus doesn't work. And that's why they held their mechoyev. So now I look bad, says Yaakov Avinu. Because if Geirus doesn't work, then I married two sisters, shalei kedin. So it says Rabbi Shmuel, it's a lumness of knech, and to how to learn the psukim. Yaakov's response back is, you're going to embarrass me. So Pashup Shai, you learn, you're embarrassing me because you guys look like a bunch of, you know, wild men without any control. Says Rabbi Shmuel, no, his taina was a lumness of taina. People in Shechem were lumness of people, they figured all this out. They figured that if Shimon and Levi were allowed to do what they did, that's because Geirus before Matan Torah didn't have a status of Geirus. You can't create Geirus. Oh, so if you can't create game, then Yaakov Avinu is in big trouble. If he's not allowed to create game, how is he allowed to marry two sisters? So that's why Yaakov Avinu was so upset. That's his shtickle taira, that Yaakov Avinu was so upset. In the Sefer Zahav Mordechai from Mordechai Elephant, Rashi Yavitri, he sometimes asks on this whole notion. He says, what does it mean stealing? Stealing means you take someone's object. When you take a girl and you violate her, you didn't steal. That's not stealing. That's whatever act you want to call it. How is that included in stealing? Everyone keeps on saying, the Rambam says, it's stealing. That's not, is that included in stealing? But for a Zev Mitzvah Noyach, what's included in Gneva? So there's a Me'iri in Sanhedrin. The Me'iri in Sanhedrin Taka says that we have a raya from this story that included in Gneva is even Gneva, these types of things. But he asks, Lamaisa, it's an interesting question. Everyone assumes for a Dova Pashit that this is included in stealing. You could break it down. This is not, again, by law, this is not called stealing. It's a different prohibition. You know, there's rape and there's this and there's stealing. It's not all the same. So he points out, it's a good aura. He points out that why is everyone so, Gneva. What's Gneva? If they would have stolen her money, you're right. You can kill them for Gneva. But they stole her. Well, they violated her. They violated her. So what type of Gneva is it?
It's a punishment that every violation of Shabbat, the punishment.
That's the Rambam Shita. That's the Rambam Shita. Yes.
That's Pashut.
Yeah, that's
Mufut. Whatever they do.
That's Pashut, yeah. So the question is, how do you understand? So he comes up with this whole shtickle Torah that Pshat is that you really stole her rights to be able to have value for her znus, for her bia. Every woman holds the right to be able to have relations with whomever she chooses. And when she gets married, that's really what's part of the cheshbon. He has rice from Gishmaki rice from Gemara that we've learned here together. But he's a hostical Torah. Basically, that's what they stole from her. They stole from her the right to decide who she wants to live with, and that has value to it. So they stole that from her. That's his hostical Torah in his sefer. But it's a good aura. Whatever pshat's going to be, it's a very fair aura. Why is that called stealing? But Lamai said the Ramban's pshat is different. This is the two famous Rishonim. You have the Rambam who holds they breached Sheva Mitzvahs Menerich, while the Ramban says, no, nothing to do with that. The Ramban says they were bad people from the get-go. They deserve to be destroyed on their own. This was just kind of like the final, the Makabah Patish. But really, they deserved it for what they did on their own. So then the cash is, so what was Yaakov so upset about? If the people in Shechem were doing, breaking Zayim Mitzvahs Menerich every single day, so why is he so upset? So the Ramban says, because Yaakov thought maybe they would do tshuva. You know, give them a chance. So everyone's up in arm over here. Maybe they'll do tshuva. What type of heter is that? Maybe they'll do tshuva. It's a very, very hard tie. But that's the way the Ramban learns. There's two other famous pshatim they call from Achrayim. They call between the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma said the Chayiv Misa because they were choyvel themselves v'shaloy l'tzerich. He has a whole raya that a Ben Noach has a prohibition from being choyvel himself. He can't harm himself. A Ben Noach can't go and cut himself for no reason. So therefore, since they did a milah shalat tzayrich, that was chavala ba'atzmai paskin the Meshech Chachma is somehow a breach of Shev Mitzvahs Nech. No one really knows where he got this from. No one knows where this fits in, but that's the famous Meshech Chachma. What? Apparently, according to this idea. Yeah, rather. We can all do tshuva. It's a little easier for us, maybe. And the last chapter they quote from the Chedusha. What? So that's part of the deen. Was it considered l'tzayrich or shalat tzayrich? They held that doing it to be able to get married, to be joined. That's part of the discussion on the Meshech Chachma. They talk about that also. How are they allowed to do that? The last pshat from the Achrayim is from the Chiddush Erim. The Ger Rebbe. The Ger Rebbe said another Chiddush. He said that although the Gemara says that a Goy Shavas Chayiv Misa, says the Ger Rebbe, Goy Shemal Chayiv Misa. It's a new Chiddush. That if a Goy gives himself a Bris Mila, he's also Chayiv Misa. That's another thing that's only for Jews. Goyim can't have Bris Mila. The same way if a Goy keeps Shabbos, the Gemara says he's Chayiv Misa, so says the Chiddush Erim, if a Goy gives himself a Mila, he's also Chayiv Misa. So since they gave themselves Milas, that's why they were Chayiv Misa. As I zocked the Ger Rebbe. In any case, this is many svarim are written on this topic of what was the conversation back between Yaakov and his sons. But what I always find interesting is the end of the last line. Yaakov Avinu gives them real teichacha. How could you do this? You're putting us in harm and danger. And their answer back is one line. Hachazayne yasas hachaseinu. What's the answer? What type of answer is that? Yaakov Avinu was saying, you put us in danger, you embarrassed me, you insulted us, you this, that. And you answer back, oh, they're going to turn our sister into Zayin. What's the conversation? So I always thought Pashup Shah the conversation was, and maybe it's a little, not so sure if it's MS Lamita, but I always thought Yaakov, the response to the father was, listen, Dad, you're 100% right. You're right. Logically, this doesn't make any sense, and we didn't think it out, but emotionally, we couldn't do it. Achazayin, what do you want us to do? This was an emotionally driven decision. You're tying me logic. I'm tying you back emotions. And this is an issue we all deal with as human beings because we have both logic and emotions in us. Sometimes we make decisions that are logical. Sometimes we make decisions that are emotional and not logical. So the tying it back to the dad was, you're right, Dad. Logically, you're 100% right. But this was an emotional decision. It wasn't a logical. We didn't sit down and work out what would happen if this, what would happen if that. We just said, listen, it's our sister. Look the way they're mistreating her. We got to do something.
But that's not true. Because there was a whole plan.
It was a plan. Emotional plan. They weren't just walking into town and blowing up.
Right. Had a whole plan.
So the truth is, if you look in the Arachayim HaKadosh and other Mefarshim, they tackle come up with pshatim to what the taina was. Meaning, one of Yaakov's main taina was is that this is a very dangerous move. because now people are going to come back and kill us as a nation. So the Rechaim HaKadosh says, no, HaChazeinu Yaseh Zechaseinu means that this was, people will look and say, ah, they're not going to say Yaakov's kids are a bunch of barbarians, animals, and we have to knock them off the face of the earth. They're going to say this was justified. And if it's viewed by the world as justified, this will not lead to later issues. That's one pshat. The other pshat they say is that that if we don't, they were saying back to the father, they say, Dad, we have to do something. Because if we don't do something, Jewish blood becomes cheap. If we don't show the world that they can't just take our daughters and do what they want with us, and no one's going to say anything, then Jewish blood becomes very cheap and it's not going to end well for us. And there's tshuvas written from later Achrayim, early Achrayim, later Achrayim, about situations where Bati Dinim had to make decisions based on this pasuk, where they said, if we don't draw the line, if we don't show the world that Jewish blood is not cheap, we're going to end up in a situation where people, both Jewish and sometimes not Jewish, will not take Jewish blood and Jewish life sensitive and seriously, and we're going to have problems. And they bring a riot in this pasuk where seemingly Yaakov answered it. Even though most Mepharshim learn that in Parshas Vayechi, he gets them for it anyways. Again, when he gives it the brachas, he kind of rebukes them one more time. But here, yeah, but they violated her. If you're going to allow, you know.
But it's not they. You have from time immemorial, by Avimelech and Avraham. He took Sarah because, I forget what it's called in Latin, but it's the right of the king. King comes and takes the woman that he wants. So this was done by a king, and on top of it, he was going to marry her. He wasn't forcing her to
marry. Right.
So, I mean, it was a very, almost a complimentary thing over here.
Socially accepted, as they'd say.
Socially accepted.
Right. At the end of the parasha, we find another event which seems to be very irrelevant to anything. We find the passing of the Menekes of Rachel. Rachel's nurse passes. The Torah makes a big deal about it. So the question is, what's the big event that Rachel's nurse passes away? So Moshe Shtermich has a very beautiful pshat where he says is that the Torah is telling us that many times we lose sight on the early stages of development of a child. We always look at kids, when they're 18 and when they're 20, when they're 25, we forget they have to first work from a young age to be who they are. So he says the Menekes of Rachel represented her youth. She raised Rachel from the early stages of life, and she was there for her, and she assumingly educated her and taught her. So he says, I always say, I would never want to be a Pirane Rebbe, ever in a million years. I just went last week to take my son for an interview, and I was watching what the Rebbeim do. In a million years, I would do any other job. Huh?
Pre-1A for an interview?
No, I took my son to get it. Yeah, he had to get an interview for P1A. I would never want to be a P1A Rebbe in a million years. I have the utmost respect for any P1A Rebbe because, as I always tell people, you can't learn Rebbe Kivager and you can't learn Tzoyis if you don't know Aleph Beis. So someone's got to teach them Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. I don't want to be the person to do it, but someone has to do it. So here also, we lose sight, we think, what's important is that, when they get older, we teach them, alumnus, we teach them these things, but if they don't have a strong base in the beginning, they're going to go nowhere. A kid can't learn anything if he doesn't know Aleph and Beis and Gimel and Dal. Very, very important. So says Rav Moshe Sternberg, that's the lesson that the Torah is teaching us over here. Remember, who got Rachel where she was today? She wasn't just born Rachel. She had stages of development and she grew as a child. So you have to remember, the Gemara tells us the Girsa D'Yankas, or the Torah that we learn when we're young, has a special key later on in life. The building blocks that we use in life are very, very important. We sometimes lose focus because we think, I always ask, what's the difference between second and third grade? There's such a big difference. They say, yeah, there's a huge difference because I don't know anything. I don't know what a second grade Rebbe teaches versus a third grade. To me, one's Chumash and one's more Chumash. I don't know. But there's major, major accomplishments that happen in each one of these young grades of children. And everything changes that has a very big impact on their life later on. And the Torah is teaching us by mentioning the death of Rachel's nurse, who was very integral in her growth, is the Torah reminding us this lesson, which we all know, that the youth and the raising of a child doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in the first 20. Right? I think they say about Reb Soloveitchik, or they say either Reb Soloveitchik or about Reb Chaim. He used to play with his kids. He used to play with his sons, cops and robbers. So they asked him, why do you play with your son, cops and robbers? He said, because then when we're older, we can play Rambam and Ravid. Right? If you don't start at a young age, you got to come from somewhere. It's not going to be one day you're going to wake up, the kid's 15, okay, let's learn all day. You have to understand there's a whole growth process, and Rabbeim are trained to do this, and they do great jobs with their children. But we sometimes lose sight of how important that role is of what we call the Girsa D'Yankas, the early development of children. The very, very important role, which really, really is going to change who they become as adults.
Just.
Huh? Baruch Hashem, you got it. Yeah, it wasn't. I told my son, I said, "Nu, let's prepare sugya. What are they going to ask you?" I said, "We're learning Dalai Lama's in the morning." So the Manal asks you anything on Dalai Lama's, we're good to go. Nothing on Dalai Lama's, nothing on anything. He asked them what color lollipops they have. That was it. I even want brach, you make an lollipop, you make a brach, a lollipop. Nothing tricky. It was pretty easy for her. In the beginning of the parasha, just to wrap up, we find the conversation, we find a change in language between Esav and Yaakov. which both the Chafetz Chaim and the Rav Moshe Feinstein point out, is also very important for life. We find that Esav, when he's discussing about his life, he says, Yeshli Rav, I have a lot. As opposed to Yaakov, who says, Yeshli Kol, I have everything. So both the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Moshe Feinstein point out the same idea. What does it mean, Yeshli Rav? It means I have a lot, but I'm not all there yet. I have a lot, I did a lot, I accomplished a lot, but I don't have all the money that I'd like to have. Well, Yaakovinu's answer was, Yeshli Kol, I have all I need. So they both point out, they say, the difference in attitude is reflected in their speech. Yaakov Avinu was saying, Yesh, I have everything I need. Because anything I need, I have. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me whatever I need, I don't need anything more, and I'm not lacking. Esav was saying, no, Yesh, I have a lot, but I haven't cracked my first million yet, I have a lot more to go, a couple homes I want to buy, a couple cars I still need. I'm not there just yet. So the difference in the way we speak is really what we feel inside. Yaakov Avinu was completely content with what he had. He was thrilled. I have everything I need. Because Baruch Hu gave me everything I have, and whatever I have is what I need. I'm happy as I can be. And this is a trend we've spoken about in many of the other others that we came across in Sefer Bereishis, is that was their attitude. Whatever Baruch Hu gives me, I'm happy with. Because that's all I need. Baruch Hu knows exactly what I need. He gives me what I need. So whatever I have, I'm happy. And I don't have, I don't need it. That's the difference between an Esav and a Yaakov. A person walks around with an attitude of Yeshli Rav, he's always looking for the next. He's never happy. Yaakov Avinu's attitude, I'm happy. This is whatever I have is what I'm supposed to have. There's no reason to continuously desire what I don't have because it wasn't meant for me. If it wasn't meant for me, I'm not supposed to have it. How do I know it wasn't meant for me? Because if it was meant for me, I would have had it. Because Baruch gives us what we need. Therefore, they point out the change in language is really a reflection of what they're thinking. And then we have to end off with Rashi that tells us in this week's parasha, a halacha from the name of Reb Shimon, Esav Sein LeYaakov. Anti-Semitism is not a new thing, and anti-Semitism is not going anywhere. It's Esav Sein LeYaakov. So I just saw last night someone asked Chaim Kanevsky, does that include Arabs? Because Esav is Christians. So Chaim Kanevsky says, it includes everyone. They all hate us. All non-Jews hate us. It's not only one type of guy. They call him the name of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said when he used to walk in the street and he see Goyim, he used to tell people the only reason why the Goyim don't attack me is because they're too lazy to get up. He says, but Etzim, they attack me. They hate us. There's no question. They're just too lazy to get up. So today we can change it. Today the Goyim don't attack us because it's not socially accepted. They get arrested. It doesn't look good. But the sinner doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't change. The hatred doesn't go away because we live in, Baruch Hashem, very calm times in the world. Today, as we mentioned many times, the sinner changed. Now it's an anti-Israel movement. Instead of calling anti-Semites, they call themselves anti-Israel. I'm showing it's mutter because it's not anti-Semitic. I'm anti-Israel. I'm anti the oppression of what's going on over there. They make all this lamda shatayra over here, but it's the same thing. The halach of Esav Sein LeYaakov doesn't change over time. It's maybe changes in different forms, different reasons, different excuses they use for why they hate us. They hate us over land, or they hate us over our success, or whatever other reasons they give for the hatred. But the hatred doesn't change. That continues. And the only way we can fight off the hatred is by doing what we're supposed to do as Am Yisrael. But to think for a second that the hatred changes or goes away, that's not true. Doesn't go away. They hate us till the end. We just have to figure out ways to keep them at bay, to keep them away. If we do what we're supposed to do, then we have a havtacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He'll protect us from the nations around us. Okay, so we're holding over here in the Gemara. The Gemara is trying to figure out how do you have a situation of a get where the Mishnah says in Gittin, you throw the get closer to her, she's divorced, closer to him, they're not divorced, half and half is a suffigation. So just very bekitz, so let's go through the Gemara one more time because we really need to move on to the last piece of the Gemara. So the Gemara says again, one more time, Hechidami karav lo, Hechidami karav lo. How do you have a case closer to her, closer to him? Amar Rav, Abba Amish Shalom, Zeh karav lo. If the gets within her Dalar Amas, that's called closer to her and she's divorced. Abba Amish Shalom, if the gets within his Dalar Amas, karav loy, that's closer to him and they're not divorced. Hechidami mechza mechza. How do you have a scenario where it's 50-50? Keep in mind, this is going to be important for going further. The words of the Mishnah are mechza al mechza, which again, literally translate half and half. Or 50 and 50. Mechza al mechza. So the Gemara says, the Gemara has an akimta where they're basically shearing one of the four amas. They're both together in Dalar amas. They came together at the same point. So the one ama, they share together. So there are shutuf on the middle ama. So the Gemara says, what's the big deal? Let's just see who came first. Whoever comes first gets the whole four amas.
How do we know from it that it's the same amas? It just says arba amas. How do we know?
Because the case of it, they're both occupying the same four amas. So if they're both occupying the same four amas, what happened was they both walk like this, and then in the middle is the four amas. So they're sharing some form of the four amas, they're b'shutif.
But one of the four
amas? No, some of it. Some of the...
Oh, so it's not tafka one
of them. No, but the point is that when they're both...
The get is
in shared area. That's what's the getas. The get is in shared property.
But so one more. What's the habamina of the Gemara, the Hechidami Karav Law, Hechidami Karav Law? If the answer is that it's Karav Law, if it's in her Dalat Abbas, it's Karav Law, it's been his Dalat, what's the habamina that it was ever in hers, if it was always... In other words...
What do you mean?
What's the... If the answer is, if it It's either in her complete Dalet Amos or completely in his Dalet Amos. So when was it ever Karav to the other person?
What I think you're asking is, what does it mean Karav Loi? Why is it important to know that it's closer to him? Either it's by her or not.
Karav Lo is later defined in the next sentence as in his Dalet Amos.
Right.
It's not Karav Lo, it's his. It's got no shaykhus to her, because it's in his Dalet Amos, not in her Dalet Amos. So what's the lotion?
So that's
Karav implies that there's some kind of connection with the other person, it's just closer to you.
Right.
The case was he threw it to her, but he just didn't throw it very far.
But it didn't leave his Dalet Amos.
But what it sounds like to me you're asking is what the Rishonim ask, is that Karav Loi is irrelevant. Who cares if it's closer to him?
It's either in his Dalet Amos or not.
I mean, if it's in her Dalet Amos, she gets it. If it's not in her Dalet Amos, it could not be close to him either. That's the kasha. The Rashba and other Rishonim, they all ask this kasha. That line of the Gemara is irrelevant. Karav Loi is an irrelevant comment. Who cares if it's Karav Loi? The point is Karav Loi or ain't it Karav Loi? That's all that counts. If it's in her Dalet Amos, she's divorced. If it's not in her Dalet Amos, who cares about the husband? He's not being kainer to get. The point is, if she's kainer, she's not kainer. That's all that counts. Whether or not he's going to be kainer is irrelevant. Yeah, the Rishonim have this kasha. It would be negated to Agadah, but let's say it's not such a case. Let's say we're talking about where it's not closer to her husband. So it's not within her Dalet Amos. It's not anywhere near his Dalet Amos. So then the halach would also be she's not divorced because it's not Karav Law. The fact that it would be Karav Law would seem irrelevant. Yeah, we'll talk about Agadah in a minute. So the Gemara answers you right. So the Gemara said, we're talking about a case going through Shneim, I'm the Bar Amos. Maybe they came at the exact same point. The Gemara says, "Vayev shalat sam." We spoke about that last week. Halachal ma'aser that's so accepted. We spoke about the Ramon Chayshim Mishpat. Now the Gemara says, "Anu pshat." Elamar if kahana hocha beches amos mutsamis askina. No, we're talking about a case where it's exactly four amos. They get yotzi ba'ba amos shalol ledal amos shalol. We're talking about over here now is that they each have their own four amos. But the get is kind of overlapping partially in his Dalet Amos and partially in her Dalet Amos. They each have their own Dalet Amos. They're not sharing Dalet Amos like in the first Pshat. They have their own Dalet Amos. But because it's such an exact area, the get is lying in a way that half of it is in his Chatzar, Dalet Amos, and the other half is by her. That's the Gemara's assumption. Frekti Gemara Kasha, that can't be. Why? V'ha Agud Gabe. But it's connected to him. So we spoke a little bit last week that there's two ways to learn the Gemara's Kasha. One way to learn the Gemara's Kasha, which is seemingly the way Rashi learned the Gemara's Kasha, is that the problem over here is you never created a Maisa Nesina. Part of Nesina, it says in Torah, V'nosan biyado, you have to give the get to her. Giving the get to her means I take the entire get and I put it completely in her hand. As opposed to here, where part of it's in her hand, part of it's in his hand. That's one way of reading the Gemara. That way of reading the Gemara sounds like it's a Gerushin issue. The other way to read the Gemara, which is the way many Achrayim think Pshat in the Gemara is that V'Hagad Gabe is a fancy way of saying you never really gave it to her. Forget Gerushin. Let's make believe this wasn't Gerushin. Let's make believe this was Chayshim Mishpat. And I had a case where I have a backyard, and I have a long piece of wood. And I put the piece of wood, half of it is hanging in my backyard, and the other half is hanging out in the middle of the street. You're going to tell me I'm Kayin Kini Chatzim? So let's get to that. We're going to get to that later on, but maybe we'll touch upon that a little bit now. So again, those words are Gerushin words. That's why it gets a little confusing over here. As our Salvation pointed out last week, we mentioned, those are words used in a Gerushin context. They're not used when you're talking about Chayshim Mishpat. So the kasha that Achrayim and Rishonim have is that this problem over here is not a Gerushin issue. This is a Chayshim Mishpat issue. The way Kinyan Chatzah works is, or the way Kinyan Dalet Amos works is that the whole object is in my Dalet Amos or in my Kinyan Chatzah. Here, I don't have that. Forget, let's make believe there wasn't another party over here. Let's make believe I have my backyard, and my backyard is open to the front of the Rishus HaRabim. And I have a long piece of wood, and I have half of it, I'm building my sukkah, so I have half a piece of beam that I put, lay across, so half of it's in my backyard, and the other half is hanging out to the sidewalk. Would I be kind of Kinyan Chatzah with that?
But would the portion that would be in your...
So the question is, can you split an object? Can we imagine every, you know? Oh, so that's a Gerush initial. We'll see if that's, we'll see in a second. Yeah, we're going to get to that in a second. Very good.
But he wants to give her the get, so you can say EFP, but that's...
That's what we spoke about last week. Reb Kiveg is a taina about why can't the husband just say, well, I don't want my Dalet Amos here, let me move it away. So that we spoke about, that not everyone agrees to that, that's always so possible. We'll see today that the Ran has a little bit of a different angle to that idea.
He's saying it, he's demonstrating it.
So that was Reb Kivega's assumption. Reb Kivega had this as a kasha in his tshuvas, where he thought that could be the easy way out of the whole Gemara. And he said that although that's true, the way Reb Kivega said it, where we were masber based in the Baal HaMor, was you're right. Even though the husband relinquishes rights to Kinyan, but his rishus of Dalet Amos still shares a nesina from him to her because his rishus,
Right, yeah. So
you're going back to Tzitzis, you know. Yeah, we'll get to that hopefully today also. Yeah, in Echram, if you're going to go that angle, it might be able to work. So Rashi, by us, number two, how does Rashi know the Gemara's Kasha? So Rashi writes, V'ogit gabei, adayin haget b'rushusay k'tzas. The get is still partially by the husband. V'anan v'nosam b'yod b'inan. And we need an asina. So Rashi's pinpointing it as a gerushin problem. So Rashi's learning that the din by gerushin requires that the whole get has to be completely by her. You can't have partially by the husband and partially by her. It has to be completely by her.
That,
why?
That defines the
because that defines the nesina. Although when we read the pasuk with nasam biyada, no one really thought for a second it means you have to take. Let's say you have a long get. Rav Soloveitchik talks about this halacha lemaisa based on a kivega and a pischei tshuva in kufla mites. Let's say you have a guy gives a big fancy get to his wife, a big paper, and he gives a piece of paper and she holds a piece of paper like this. So part of it gets in her hand, and this whole part is not in her hand. So Rav Soloveitchik said, b'shem his father, that's a problem. We're machmir, that's no good. The nasam biyada means the get has to be fully in her hand. So you got to take the get, fold it up in a way where the entire get is situated on her hand. That's what he held based on Rebbe Kivega. Now, most of us wouldn't have read the Gemara like that. Or the Pasuk in Chumash. The Nasa B'yada means you got to put the whole get into her hand. The Nasa B'yada means put the get into her hand to the point where she's claiming. They call from the Nesivis. The Nesivis holds, let's say, for example, I'm walking down the street and I find a Dover Hefker. And it's a big Dover Hefker. And I pick it up with my hand. And the bulk of it is not in my hand. So the Nesivis writes that you're not claiming. Because Kinyan Yad means the whole object has to be into your Yad.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah,
the problem is that it's still in his hand.
Okay.
That's also your nine notes and metallics, no?
Yeah. That's correct. Right, so the question over here, is the problem over here because she doesn't have all of it? Or the problem is not that she doesn't have all of it, but that he has some of it? That's the shaila.
Can you have an asina if you're still holding on?
Right. So, I mean, let's say, for example, we have the same scenario where it's not the husband. It's, let's say the get would be a long get, and half of it's hanging outside her Dalai Lamas, and half of it's hanging in her Dalai Lamas. So the husband's not involved at all, right? The husband left, he's not here. So in Rashi, yesh lodom what Rashi means. Does Rashi mean the chsaron over here is, v'anam v'nosam bi'inon ad sheyekulei b'rushusoi, is the word that she doesn't have the whole get, no matter who the other person is, or that she doesn't have the whole get, and he's holding on to it. So the end of Rashi is not so mashma that the husband's the problem over here. The end of Rashi is mashma, that it's not all by her. That's what it sounds like from Rashi. So if you look over here, I found over here an interesting sefer, Imre Shmuel. So he wants to tie it like this. He says, that he thinks Rashi holds this way, that from the words v'nasam biyada we somehow learn that not only do we're to put the get, v'nasam biyada is a destination, but v'nasam biyada is how to do it. You have to put the whole get biyada. Again, I'm not really sure why one would have learned the pasuk that way. He writes, ach tzarechin, the perushay. There's one problem with this pshat. Why? The big gemar, the lashon haGemara, mashmah dachasarum mishum shabal toifes pa. Ulufi devei Rashi, afilum loy habal toifes pa. Cause man shein kol get biyada in the megureshes. He asks, doesn't fit with the Gemara. If we're learning Rashi, that Rashi learned the problem was she didn't have the whole get by her. So what's ogud gabe? Ogud gabe means because it's by him. That's not the point. The point is not because half of it's by him. The point is because all of it's not by her. The Gemara went the wrong way. If you're going to learn Rashi, that the chesaron over here is that the get is not totally by her. And that's the end of Rashi. Actually, kuloi birushusa, until the whole get's in her possession. So then when the Gemara says, well, it's ogud gabe, it's connected to him. That's not the right wording. The proper wording would have been, v'loi have a kulo birushusa, like Rashi says.
So Rashi,
right, so Rashi is very troubling. Rashi seems to be trying to play both sides of it. Rashi trying to conclude the Tosfos Rosh that we mentioned last week. The Tosfos Rosh, we mentioned that the Tosfos Rosh and others were troubled by the fact that, forget the fact that it's not completely by her and the husband's still attached. Ogud gabe means the husband is attached.
But he was the previous owner. So if it's not by her, then it's by him.
Well, it's more than that. It's because the half where the get is happens to be his rishus. Right, the get sitting.
So even if he was out of the picture, it still belongs to him.
What belongs? The paper?
The get. Yeah.
Yeah, but if it would be fully in her Dalai Lamas, we'd have no problem.
Right, but the language of Gabe makes sense even according to the end of Rashi, because...
Why?
Because if it's not fully hers, then it's his. And if it's his, then it's Gabe.
We're not dotting on the bailus of the get, we're dotting on the situation of the get, where the get is located.
If he walked away...
Right, where's the get? Who's...
Right, so if he walked away...
So the Dalai Lamas isn't his anymore.
Right, got,
it started out as his.
Yeah, we're not worried. So whenever it gets like that, we're never worried about the bailus of the get. When we talk about an asino, well, again, Belineder, that's what I'm trying to get us to the next series of get biyodo, meshicha biyodo, where the Gemara talks about a case where the husband throws a get while he holds onto a string. and he, you know, he could pull the string anytime he wants. Believe that there, I'm trying to get us there. But
yeah. $10.
Does that mean that the $10 is saying it's in her hand? No, it's in her dalamas. It's in the ground. It gets laying in a way.
I understand that. So why are we questioning now the biyada, whether it's
no, because biyada includes, because
it doesn't matter if it's in her dalamas.
No, because biyada includes dalamas. So the same way the get has to be fully in her hand, the full get has to be fully in her dalamas. And over here, you don't have that here.
Wait, but if it's in her dalamas fully, then what's the difference if she's holding it or not?
No, but it's not. That's the problem. The problem is the get is half in her dalaramas and half in his dalaramas. So the question is, well, how do we look at this problem? If we, you know, freeze the situation, we say, well, the whole get's not by her. Or the problem's not the whole get's not by her. The problem is the half that's not by her is by the wrong guy. It's by the husband. He's the worst guy to be holding on to a get because he's Agud Gabe. Now, yeah, I think there's what to talk about how exactly Rashi learns of Agud Gabe. But what I think is important is like this. Many Rishonim, shouldn't say all Rishonim, the Ritva, the Rashba, the Ran, they all have a kasha. They want to know, why did the Gemara first wake up now with this kasha of Agud Gabe? Why did the Gemara think about this in the first half of the Gemara? The first half of the Gemara was they shared the Dalaramas together. So why did the Gemara say, oh, it's Agud Gabe, shared property? Why did the Gemara only wake up now, Agud Gabe? Many Rishonim are bothered with this kasha. So he points that over in the Sefer Yemei Shmuel. He says, 1 second. If you learn like Rashi, then this is not a kasha. How did Rashi learn the kasha? Rashi is learning the chesar over here is not Agud Gabe that's connected. The chesar is not fully by her. If the case would have been, it's all by her, and it's ground also all by him, but it's all by her. You're not going to say that the get is not fully in her rishus. It's fully in her dalaramis. So from the fact that all these rishayim come in with a kasha, and they want to know, why didn't the Gemara ask the same kasha in the first step of the Gemara? Clearly they weren't learning like Rashi. Because if you were to learn like Rashi, the way he's learning Rashi, that the chesaron over here is not a connection issue, but the get's not fully by her, that kasha you don't have in the first step of the Gemara. So Alamai, from all the other Rishonim, the Rashba and the Ritva and the Ram, they all have this kasha. They clearly understood not like this Rashi. That's a shtickle term.
They don't have an issue
about Rashi? They do. So let's see what they say. So if you look in the Rashba, number 4, he first addresses this issue. The Rashba has a kasha. Why didn't the Gemara ask the same kasha of Agud Gabe in the first half Amina like we do in the next case? Mishum says the Rashi very poshut. The kiv and the koi kula b'secha abamas dido. He says, what's the difference between the first case of the Gemara and the second case of the Gemara? The first case of the Gemara, the get is totally in her rishus. It happens to also be totally in his rishus, but it's totally by her. So he says, therefore, to have a kimagreshes and magreshes. That's why it makes a lot of sense. She should be suffering magreshes. Avol kamon de koi miktsos echot labamas dido. But the second case of the Gemara, where half the get is not in her rishos, the koi barbamas dide, and it's by him, then shaykh lamifrich vo ogid gabe. Then we have a kasha of ogid gabe. So the Rashba seemed to have understood that ogid gabe is only a problem, not that the fact that we're both connected to the get. Ogid gabe is, if half the get is by you, no good. Over here, half the get's not by you. The whole get's by me. It happens to be that the whole get's also by you.
So it's not a kal v'chomer.
Right, it's a very funny thing over here, this Rashba. The Rashba understood that Agud Gabe would not be a problem unless half the get is by the husband, while not by me. The fact that we have equal rights to the get is not a problem, according to the Rashba. It's just that if the get is not completely by me, and not totally by me, that becomes a problem.
That's basically Rashi, isn't it?
That's what one would have thought. So according to this Rashi, this is really a negeya to a topic we talked about many times of Agud Gabe. How do we learn Agud Gabe? So from this Rashi, we understand that Agud Gabe is a bigger problem when the ish is lacking something. Meaning, half the get is by her, and the other half is by him. Oh, he's too connected. But if the whole get's by me, although the whole get's by you also, that the Rashi felt doesn't share Agud Gabe.
And how does that work again? I mean, I know we talked about it.
Why?
How could two people have 100% ownership for the same thing?
Right, so the Chazon Ish will tell you they don't. The way the Chazon Ish learned it was no one, there's only one real owner. We just don't know who the real owner is. We just can't figure it out. So therefore we have to call it Megareshes or Eino Megareshes. We give it a Din of Suffolk. But really, really deep down, there's only one owner. That's the way the Chazon Ish assumed it.
Why is
the
it any different than a typical Bialos when you have two partners that both of them are 100% owners?
Because over here the problem was the Teis Rosh had a cash over it, it's a Chatzra Shutfin. If they're both partners on the Dalaramas, then they can't be makdim one to the other. So they can't be makdim one to the other, so he can't give her the get. So the Teis Rosh said, you're going according to the Sheet and Baba Basra, the Chatzra Shutfin works. Chazon Ish said, no, it doesn't work. And the attack are both not owners, there's only one owner. We just don't know who the real owner is. So we give it a din of Megareshes v'ein of Megareshes. That's the Rashba Zahara. The Ritva in number 5 starts off like the Rashba, And then he just turns. He says the whole shtickle Torah that Agud Gabe is only a problem when half the get is by me and half the get is by you. But if the whole get is by me and the whole get is by you, it's not Agud Gabe. That's exactly what the Rashi says. And the last line, the Ritva writes, V'loi Nihira, I don't like it. The Chol Shaget B'Shusay Agud Gabe. So you see a lomda shemachloikish b'shayim over here. So how do you define the chesaron of agud gabe? Is the fact that the husband has any connection? The Ritva say no. If it's partially by the husband, although it's completely by me and completely by the husband, that's agud gabe.
So his wife,
we completely. You have a ma'isa nesina to a makam that belongs completely to me, and it also belongs completely to you. It's a funny scenario. Usually it doesn't happen. So the Rashi will tell you that's okay. Agud Gabe means when the husband has something over her. He doesn't have anything over her. They're equal. Masha'enki, the Ritva will say, no. If the husband's involved, we got problems. If the husband's involved in any level in this get, chatz, or whatever word you want to use, that's already a problem of Agud Gabe. It's a very serious thing about how to define Agud Gabe.
The Ritva
doesn't
answer the
He's not. So the Ritva ends up learning in Acharami. We could have, the Gemara didn't. That's the way the Ritva answers it. The Gemara could have, we didn't. That's the way the Ritva said.
Does my Dalar Amos only potentially stare your Dalar Amos if, or to come into play if you're also being coned through Dalar Amos, or even being coned through some other mechanism? Because, for instance, whenever I give something into your Yadav, presumably I'm standing within your Dalar Amos. So it's true, it's in your Yads, but it's Agud Gabe because I'm in your Dalar Amos.
Right, so if I'm using Kenyan Yad, so then I'm basically saying I don't want to use Kenyan Dalar Amos. If I would have to say Dalar Amos.
You don't want to use it, but I want to use it, maybe. Or not if you can't take yourself out of it, from we said Rabbi Kiva, where you can
remove yourself.
Let's say I can't remove myself from Dalar Amos, so how do I ever get around the again, problem that I'm...
Because according to many, Dalar Amos is only going to work by a Metzia or by an Aveda. If it works by Mekach HaMem, Kayat HaMachloik is Rishayim. So it's only really going to be gained by Metzia.
But I'm talking about here by Get. How do I, if I put it nothing but Yodah, but I'm still at the same time, it's in my Dalar Amos.
You're always going to be that way.
Well, so if you assume, that depends.
It's not the same as Dalar Amos. Well, it's on the floor. It's not necessarily.
So if I put it in her Yad, so then it's Kenyan Yad. I'm no longer bound by Kenyan Dalar Amos. It's a different Kenyan.
That's not your Dalar Amos, but what about my Dalar Amos?
My Dalar Amos can't affect her Yad.
That's what I'm asking. Dalar Amos can only affect your Dalar Amos.
Correct.
Can't affect your
Yad. Yes. Okay, so let's move on to the next major sugya over here in the Gemara. Is the Gemara's answer.
Because we understand the other.
Right. So the Gemara says, Ela Rabba Reb Yosef Zamit Shavaya, Nupshat in the Gemara. How do we have a case of Mechza? Mechza is the Gemara, Hacha B'shtei Kite Eidem Maskina. No longer are we measuring things and we're figuring out Metzias, now it's a Lamda Shashayla. You have two groups of Eidem. Achas Eimeris Karav Law, the Achas Eimeris Karav Law. Two Eidem walk and they say, yeah, I saw the get was closer to her. Another two guys say, no, I saw the get, it wasn't closer to her. So you have two Eidim, what we call Trey or Trey. We don't know what to do, Suffolk. So therefore, it's Migureshes or Eidim Migureshes. That's the Gemara's answer. That's the case of Mechza Mechza. We have two Kiti Eidim that are being machish each other. We don't know who's telling the truth. We don't know what to do. I was like, that's the end of the Gemara.
Like the first Teretz, right?
What do you mean, it's like the first Teretz?
Meaning that each one knows that it's in their Dalar Amos, right? Each one has their own Dalar Amos. It's the same thing over here. That Eidim are just saying, they're not saying any more than what we already knew in the first Teretz.
The problem is the first Teretz of the Gemara, we couldn't come up with a physical, creative way to make it be a Suffolk. And we rejected. Now we have a better way. We have no longer are we measuring anything. Now it's just a simple case of Eidus.
Who are these?
We're going to have to talk about what's the role of these Eidim. Well, let's first see Tosfos. Tosfos number 7. Very geshmak of Tosfos.
By the way, this part of the Gemara is arguing the part of Mechza Mechza.
No, we're explaining Mechza Mechza. When it says half and half means two kiti eidim. That's the problem. That's what we got to see in Tosfos.
So, funny way.
That's what we're going to get to right now. That's what I want to talk about. So again, so frek Tosfos Akasha, vim toimar. Velishnik, you're going to lay a dinner. How many are you called them? Ulkacha, visveka. So Tosfos, I don't get the whole problem with the Gemara. Why can't you make the case very simple? That we just don't know who was at the Dalar Amos first. The suffix of the Gemara, Mechza Mechza, is we don't know. Did he get there first or did she get there first? Right, the Gemara earlier said that maybe they came at the same time. He can't come at the same time. Fine. So why can't it be we're Pashat Mesupik? We have no idea who came first. That was she first in the area or was he first? It's a suffix Yediyah, and that's the case of Mechza Mechza. Same for Taisvus. V'yeshleimer for Taisvus the lishna the Mechza Mechza leimash mahachi, because the words Mechza Mechza don't sound like that. So Taisus says, you're right, in theory that could have been the case. The case could have been where we don't know who was first to the Dalai Lama and therefore who has rights to the Dalai Lama. We just don't know. We're ignorant. We couldn't watch it. There's no instant replay. So therefore it's a suffix. Says Taisus, no, but that doesn't fit to the Mishnah. Why would that be called Mechtza al Mechtza? Why would that be called 50-50? 50-50 makes it sound like when we're talking about physical. If they get it physically closer to me. But here you tell me Mechtza al Mechtza is it's 50-50 because we don't know who came first. That's not 50-50. So therefore, says the Tosfos, that's why the Gemara rather talk about two groups of Edom. So Frek the Marsha, well, why is that any better? When you have two groups of Edom walk in, one group says closer to him, one group says closer to her. That's better Mechtza al Mechtza. That fits better into the words of 50-50. That's also not 50-50. Mechtza al Mechtza means like a numbers game. This is not numbers, this is a halacha. So why is this pshat any better? As they Frek the Marsha. So if you look at number 8, the Marsha asks, he explains first Tosfos. He says, Mechtza le mashma hachi, shem devadi le have mechtza al mechtza. When Tosfos' kasha was, why can't we establish we're talking about we don't know who came first? So Tosfos' answer was, because that's not mechtza al mechtza. Explains the Marsha, what does that mean? Because mechtza means devadi, it can't be this pshat. Devadi le have mechtza al mechtza, the efshel tzamtzim. Because again, we always know it's either one or the other, for who karev loy oiloy. El dan al yadin le, we don't know. If you can't call that 50-50, 50-50 sounds like it's equal. It's not equal. Either one was first, the other one was first. We just don't know, and therefore you can't call it Mechtza al Mechtza. So, fact the Masha, Avol Koshedim, can I my Kamil Kamon Mokilo Beveit Ki Deidim? So, how can you set the Gemara up by two pairs of Edim? The Mizeh, Tikum Mizeh, how does that fix the problem? The Avad Bechir Gavna Namila Ve Mechtza al Mechtza. That's also still not 50-50. Shareheim Achishim Zezeh, they're arguing on each other. Vanan Le Yadin and Haminai. We still don't know who was there first. It's not again.
It's not a physical reality.
Exactly. It's still the same issue. It's not a physical shiloh. So if it's not a physical shiloh, how does it fit with mechtza al mechtza? So the Yeshli Yashiv says the Masha, the betray ki the edim lefi haniru hu mechtza al mechtza. Says the Masha, no. The difference is this. When you have two edim to the eye, it looks like we don't know. It looks like a physical issue. Although obviously it's not. It's just appearance. It looks like that. The chiyamina karv law or beit amina karv law. Oki trei b'hadi trei v'avi ke mechtza al mechtza. So the Mashiach doesn't give us such an explanation. What he means by that, he means to say over here is that if it's a question of who came first, so that's not a physical question whatsoever. If it's trade versus trade, two Edom versus two Edom, and we're trying to figure out which Edom is right, that's more in the family of Mechtza al Mechtza. Mashiach doesn't explain too much. In Shari Yosha from Reb Shimon, right, just an interesting idea. Everyone knows who wrote Shari Yosha. Reb Shimon. It's not true. Reb Shimon did not write Shari Yosha. You know who wrote Shari Yosha? Reb Herschel Shechter's father wrote Shari Yosha. Right, there was a Yid, what happened was when Reb Shimon, this is all Reb Shimon's thoughts. Reb Shimon in the early 1930s decided he wanted to put it to pen, but he didn't think he was such a writer. So he decided to ask a bacher to come write Shari Yosha for him. At that time there was a bacher, his name was Yeshaya Aaron Shapiro. He was learning in Kamenetz.
That's Reb Shai's name for, right?
He was learning in Kamenetz by a bacher there, and Reb Shimon sent Reb Yochum Levavit a telegram, can you find me someone who's good at writing? So he found this bacher, and he came to Grunda, and he learned by Reb Shimon. But he told Reb Shimon, tonight, I want to not only write all the Yeshurim, I want to speak with you in learning. I want you to tell me everything. I don't want to just repeat what everyone tells me you said. I want to talk to you about it. Reb Shimon was maskim, and he wrote over all of Shari Yosha. If you look at the end of the Hagdama to Shari Yosha, Reb Shimon gives him a thank you. He was a bacher then. He got married in the middle of the 30s, right before the war. He had one of his kids were born. Rav Shechter's wife has an older brother. His name is Rabbi Shapiro, lives in Flatbush. So he was born before the war. But so he wrote over Shari Yosha, and then his print is what we have today of Shari Yosha. So Rav Shimon at the end of the Hagdam, he thanks him for writing it. So he was really not a boy in Grunda. He didn't learn in Grunda. He really learned in Kamenetz. But he moved to Rav Shimon, and he said later that there were a couple pieces of Rav Shimon he didn't understand. And he went to Rav Shimon, and Rav Shimon said, I also don't remember what I said. But it must have been really good Torah, so try your best to figure it out, whatever I meant. But this piece makes quite a lot of sense for Reb Shimon. This is a very understandable piece. So Shechter said about his father-in-law, he ended up, this Rabbi Shapiro became a very big Rosh Hashiva in Torah Das. He was Rosh Hashiva in Torah Das for many, many years, and he was a big gadol, big tzaddik. So Shechter said one story about him, interesting story about him, one author, Shari Yosha. He said that Rav Shechter used to shave on Cholamite, based on the ruling of Salvation. So Rabbi Shapiro wasn't raised that way, so he didn't shave on Cholamite. So he went over to Rav Shechter, probably one of the early years when they married. He said, you know, I'm just going to tell you a story. So the story goes that in the Chavetz Chaim's yeshiva, in the Rabbi's yeshiva, there are two bachim that were caught shaving on Cholamite, and the Chavetz Chaim wanted to throw them out of yeshiva. Adkan. No, he told him the whole ma'isa. He wasn't coming with tainus on him. He wasn't saying, I think you should change. I think it's wrong. He was just telling the whole story how the Chafetz Chaim saved these two bachim from being thrown out of the Rad and Yeshiva and trying to shame a chalamite. That was the story that he said over about his family. He was a big time chacham. They have his shiurim. They have a lot of his mechtovim. They have it in the house. They haven't printed it yet. But if you want to hear more stories, I'm sure you can hear this famous story when he met Reb Bach Ber. He was right before Bach Ber died. He gave him tea, a whole ganza ma'isa. I'm sure if you ask him, Shai, he probably has more stories than I know about his grandfather, but he was a very, very chashav yid. And so he was the one who actually wrote Shai Yerusha. He was the one who actually put it to pen. The words that we have, it's Reb Shimon talking, that we know, but he was the one who was very involved in the writing. He did this as a bacher. Pretty amazing. Yeah, I think he did it. He was 16 years old. He wrote this the Shari Yeshitz. Shari Yeshitz are very difficult sefer to learn. Most yeshivas, they don't learn it. My yeshiva, we learned it because my Rebbe is a grandson for Reb Shimon, a great-grandson for Reb Shimon. So we learn Reb Shimon. But a lot of other yeshivas, they don't learn it. They don't agree with the style. It's a little bit of a different style, Reb Shimon. Many of his pieces are very hard to understand. But
more so than Reb Baruch Ber?
Different than Reb Baruch Ber. Yeah, but the difference is Reb Baruch Ber, they learn in the Brisker yeshivas because he was a Talmud of Reb Chaim. There's one ma'isa that Reb Shechter says over about Reb Shimon, which he said he read in newspapers. That the story goes with Reb Shimon, that Reb Shimon had a granddaughter who wasn't so frum. Exactly how frum or whatever, it's questionable, but she wasn't very frum. And she had a friend over once on a Shabbos morning who came to visit. This granddaughter lived in Reb Shimon's house. Reb Shimon was already Rosh Yeshiva in Granda in the mid-1930s. And so Reb Shimon comes home from Yeshiva with all his Talmidim, and the granddaughter is there with her friend. And in front of all the Talmidim, the granddaughter's friend goes over to Reb Shimon and shakes her hand and says, Good Shabbos, Rabbi. So Reb Shimon shakes her hand. He says, Good Shabbos. Then. So after everyone leaves, so the granddaughter apologized to Zayda. She said, I'm so sorry, Grandpa. I didn't realize she's going to do that. She said, it's okay. It's better than embarrassing her than not. That's the way the story goes. That's right. Shechter said he heard it in newspapers. My Rebbe said that he's not so sure about the story because he says he knew a story about his great-grandfather, Reb Shimon, who had been in much more complicated situations with handshakes, and he was very much not to shake hands. So he's not so sure if this story is true or not, but that's, if Shechter said he saw it in newspapers, I don't know, I guess so. It's definitely in print, if you want to read. What?
Fake news.
But this is a very interesting story that Reb Shechter said over about Reb Shimon, that Reb Shimon shook his granddaughter's friend's hand in front of all the Talmidim. You can imagine how that looked. In front of all his Talmidim on a Shabbos morning. He must have walked home with 20 Talmidim Shabbos morning, and they're all standing and watching to see what happens. He taka shook her hand. Okay, whether or not it's true, it's not true. Reb Shimon has definitely left us a strong legacy of Torah. Shechter also comments that Reb Shimon had a son that a lot of people don't know about. Reb Shimon had a son who moved to Toronto before the war, and he lived in Toronto, and he was a big Eloi. They say about him he was the biggest Eloi from all of Reb Shimon's kids. He just wasn't very frum. He was a big Eloi. He taught, someone told me that if you know anyone who lived in Toronto in the early 40s or 50s, they had him as a teacher. He taught like grammar or chumash to many of the girls' schools in Toronto in those years. He was a big Eloi. He just wasn't very firm. Reb Shechter said he wasn't firm at all. I confirmed it with family that he was moderate. He wasn't, he was still from. He was Shem Shabbos. My Rebbe went to visit him once in Toronto. He went to visit him one year to go see Nebuch. He didn't have any children. Many of Reb Shimon's family, I believe, had infertility issues. Many of the Shkups weren't able to have children. So it's a very small family today. My Rebbe's one of two. His mother was a Shkup. My Rebbe's mother was Reb Shimon's granddaughter. She was a Shkup, and her brother had no children, and she had her brother had no kids, so that Shkup family didn't continue. And then the other son, who was in Toronto, had no children also. So the Shkup family is a very small family today. They have grandkids from my Rebbe's mother. She's a Shkup, so she married Zalig Epstein. So there's Epsteins, that's from the Shkup family. But the Shkup family, a lot of them didn't have children. But Reb Shimon left us with a great sefer for Shari Yeshu. And Reb Shimon has a piece over here where he wants to explain what happens when you have Trey Utre. What happens when you have two Edom saying one thing and two Edom saying something else? What are we supposed to do? What do we do with that information? So we all know there's a rule. You don't know what to do. You use chazaka. That's an example. A guy gives a get to a lady. We don't know if the get's kosher or not. So what do? We say, okay, b'ches kasa. What was her status yesterday? Well, yesterday, before this whole story started, she was an eshes ishah. She's an eshes ish today. What do we do when you have tre u tre? Two Edom saying one thing, two Edom saying something else. So Reb Shimon explains in number 9, he writes
it
this.
By anything?
By anything, but we're going to talk about forget. For our sake, it's relevant to get. He writes it this. V'nir l'ni yizdaiti, d'achi perusha. The b'chol ha-sveikis have a din sofik etzlonu machmas chasarn yedir. Whenever there's a suffix by us, it's because we just don't know what happened. We didn't see, did he give it, didn't he give it, was it closer to him, was it closer. We just don't know. We weren't around. We can't prove it. In such a case, the Torah says, what do you do? So you allow the chazaka to dictate what to do. You don't know if she's divorced or not divorced. So go back to her status yesterday. Says Reb Shimon, I will betray you, I suffocate, I'll be din Torah. Says Reb Shimon, when you have a trey, the whole suffix is a different type of suffix. It's not a suffix in what happened. It's a suffix in what we're supposed to do. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want us to do in such a situation where I have two Edim going both ways? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Alpishnayim Edim Yachum Dover. We're supposed to follow the rules of two Edim. But what happens when I have two different sets of Edim telling me two different stories? What do I do now? That's not a chasar and biyidia. Again, ultimately it is, because if we were to know what really happened, we'd be able to be mavar. But deep down, as far as we're presented with right now, it's a suffix in a halacha. It's a suffix what we're supposed to do. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want us to do in such a situation? When we have a hakhasha between two pairs of Edim, so we're not sure what the Torah wants us to do. The Torah says, Apishna Edim Yachim Dover, follow two Edim. Okay, but what do I do when two Edim contradict each other? How do I know which one's right? So says Reb Shimon, that's a tray. Hasofik etzlan api din Torah, she'aleinu lodo in lemaisa, lasus kishtei hakitois. We really should go like both. She'ein lanu rishos lachriya ezed din neged Edim. How do we have the right to know which group is right? One group says left, one group says right. How do I know which one to trust?
Don't they do that all the time?
When?
That's when
you have tray. Yeah. That's when you have two groups and you have to figure out who's telling the truth. That's all Parsha of Edim Zaymim. Right. Part of the Chiddush of Edim Zaymim is that we have to trust one over the other and we have to figure out who gets the Nemanis in the story.
So why is there a question here?
No, because over there we have a reason, because that second pair has proofs that the first pair is incorrect.
Okay, so that's different.
Right, so over here we have two groups. One group says, and again, the group is not contradicting the other. They're contradicting the storyline, but they're not disproving the first group as being liars. Edim Zaymim, the Chiddush is that I'm proving that your story is flawed.
Couldn't be true.
Your story can't be true because Imanu Yisim, you were with us yesterday. So again, you can still ask the same question. And Achrayim do ask the same kasha. Viter. It's still Treyu Trey. It's a fancy version of Treyu Trey. It's a little. So the answer is yes. A kasha, the Edim Zaymim works like that. But this is not hakasha. I'm not disproving your storyline. I'm just telling you that you again, obviously, I'm disagreeing with your storyline, but I'm not proving you to be apostle late. I'm just telling you I saw it my way and telling you saw it your way. So as far as me watching this, what should I do? So says Reb Shimon, I should go like both of them, which obviously is an impossibility. You can't go like both of them. I have no right or permission or path of picking who to follow. That's Reb Shimon's point over here. So what?
Right.
So that's the question. If you're learning,
same thing as,
so when we say, when we resolve back to chazak, and this is a big topic of Reb Shimon that he talks about all over Shayesha, is when we use chazak, what's the pshat? Is the pshat because we have nothing else to do, therefore we fall back on chazak? Or the pshat is chazak is a mechanism that we're supposed to put into play when we have X and Y situation?
Why
that's the question.
Chazaka is his intention to give the gap.
A chazak is just going to be, let's look at this, what was the halachic status prior to this whole story starting? She was married.
And then he gets the gap.
Then he did the questionable act, we'll call
right.
it.
So if why isn't that the last thing that happened?
Because that questionable act is questionable. Right, we need something to have. We need to look at all the facts that are clear in front of us. We know before this minute she was divorced. She was a married woman, Eishes Ish to the highest level. Then a story happened that raises questions to whether or not that changed. We don't know. So the assumption is, if you don't know what to do, so normally what we'd say is, if we don't know what happened, so we go back to what her status was a minute before the whole question arose, which is she's completely married. So if she's completely married, now this whole suffix rises up. Where does that leave us? It should be that she's not completely married. Not suffix. What does Argimara say? She's suffix. She's not completely married. She's only suffix. So says Reb Shimon,
what is based in normally, forget get. Two people are arguing over who owns something, or
so by mominess you sometimes.
So what do you normally do? So two Edom come and say Reuven owns it, and two Edom come and say Shimon owns it.
So by mominess, so then this is part of what Shimon talks about. You have to go back to who's the marikama, who's the original owner. We'll go back to who the original owner of this was, and then he'll be the owner.
Because of Sof.
Exactly.
But what if it's...
If it would be a Metziah, right, then it would be complicated. Then maybe a Chloiku, whatever the Gemara says about Metziah.
They've got
to
do something.
Right, they have to do something.
They don't just say...
Right.
Neither one gets it.
Unless it's the Kol Dolem Gavars type of things they start fighting on the
so
street.
So why don't they implement the same...
So that's the question over here. So what do we do by get? So that's what Reb Shimon says. So he says, therefore, She'ein lonu rishos lachriya ezed din neged edim, kol z'mashan esbar mihim ha-meshak medusam. We don't know what to do. We're pushed and torn. So we'll stop here for a second. So why did I bring this Reb Shimon besides to tell you the whole story about Reb Shimon's background? Is for what reason? It's because based on this Reb Shimon, you can a little bit understand why it's called Mechtza al Mechtza. It's Mamsha Mechtza Mechtza. We're torn 50-50. We have no idea what we're supposed to do. We, as onlookers, are Mamish 50-50. We have one side of us telling you to listen to this group. And we have another side saying, listen to this group. We are Mamish Mechtza al Mechtza. We're torn half and half of what to do. So according to this Reb Shimon in our Gemara, where it's Trey with Trey, It's taka a real mechza mechza. What was the marshal's kasha? Why is trade any more mechza mechza? I can read the words very nicely. Mechza mechza is because it's mamash 50-50. We have no idea what we're supposed to do. Yes, it's not a 50-50 on where the object is laying, but it's a 50 on what we should do with the object. It's not a question of what happened. It's more than what happened. It's a question of how should we proceed? What should we do with this information that we're receiving from the two kitei
edim? You're saying again, basically, it's a halacha question, not a metzias question. At this point,
exactly,
it's got removed from the area. We were interpreting it as a
physical question.
Of course, we're trying to see,
right,
hey, no, we're listening to it. Now you're saying it's really a halacha.
It's a halacha issue, but it fits much nicer into the words of mechza mechza. We're torn both ways. It's a 50-50 because we can easily go with one group of edim and come with one conclusion, or go with another group of edim and a completely different conclusion. We don't know which path to go.
We are the mechza.
Right.
It seems to be a further mechza. So
that's what we need to talk about in a second. So right, we need to talk about, so if now we're building up such a strong argument, so how could this now be pshat in the Gemara? How could trey be pshat in the Gemara that it's migrashes and migrashes? If it's trey, we don't know what to do, so let's go back and say she's not divorced, she's becheske seishish, and there's no get. Now we built up such a great argument, now the Gemara doesn't make any sense. Now how do you learn the Gemara? The Gemara says the case of Trey, that's when she's in the status of Suffolk. Why? Trey, the way Shimon described it to us, what happens? You have two people, two groups, we don't know what to follow, let's knock them both out, and go back to the way things were 2 minutes before the story started, which is she was a completely a married woman.
And this is all happening while they're still in the same dollar.
That's right. Well, again, now it's a little easier because now they're already in court. Now they're already fighting it out in court.
Right, so somebody...
So the question is, what do we do now? We have a situation where we have, again, if this was presented to a Bezim would say, I have no idea what to tell you. I know the Torah says, listen to two Edom. I have two Edom that are telling me two different stories. As far as I'm concerned, they're both reputable people. What do I do now? So the answer one would have assumed was, I say, listen, I throw this whole thing out. I say, let's go back to what her status was before this story started. She was an Ashes Ish, so she stays an Ashes Ish.
The question is, why does Gemara say Suffolk and Megoresh?
Right, so why is the Gemara called Suffolk and Megoresh? That's the question.
It's really a theoretical question, because presumably by the time they get the Beis Din, either they stayed in the same location or one of them separated from the other. So they took control then.
Well, yeah, obviously, if they were to give the get like normal people and put it into her hand, we wouldn't have a whole Masechta.
No, I'm saying, if they had the problem and two Adam saw this, and we don't know who grabbed it first, or at some point in time, it takes time.
What do you mean? They tape off the whole area and they leave it, you know, with the yellow tape. They call it crime scene, and they go to court and they fight it out.
I mean, they leave the get.
It doesn't really matter, because if the get was already wherever it was, then either it was a divorce or it wasn't a divorce. The fact that they can move the get now, it's really irrelevant to the story. They can pick up the get and put it into one of those, you know, plastic bags that no one touches. It's not going to make a difference. The story happened. It happened. The question just is now, who's best they're going to trust? Is it going to trust Reuven and Shimon? Is it going to trust Levi and Yehuda? That's really the question now. It's no longer Matthias. We're now back in. Now we switched over to Lumdus. Who should we trust? So now Bezdin is kind of torn. So we would have thought, if you don't know who to trust no one, and go back to Chazkas Eishish, which the Gemara clearly says you don't do. Yeah.
And why do you need a Chazok? Because his question is a good question, right? Because
thank you very much.
Presumably, no, it's a good question, because presumably, because if the husband is obviously has to tell the Edom whether or not, you know, he's obviously holding on to it, right?
Okay, we're going to get to Edom in a second. We didn't talk about Edom yet. There's a big question that's also here. What are the Edom watching? What are the Edom? The Edom here are just as confused as anyone else.
No, Das Baal Din. He could say, what's not in my dollar?
What's the intention of the Baal, okay. Right? So why is it, so why that, is it the Chazaka that he intended to give?
So we'll hold on. Okay, we'll get to that hopefully in 2 seconds.
What David said earlier. Yeah. Why don't you just say, just sitting there fighting, we don't know what to do, is let the guy say, you know what we got, we're here in Bezen, we're up. Right out of
what would we be doing every Sunday morning here? What do you mean? We'd have nothing to do here if it was so simple. Come on. Yeah.
Or is 100% one way or 100% the other way?
That's correct.
So
that's where Ibshim is going to break down in a second. I stopped the middle. We have to break down. Okay, so what do you do when it's tray? What do we do now? When we're left with the trade situation, what's the anhaga? So we'll have to come back to that in a second. But the Avnei Meluim has a whole different angle to this Taisus. Again, the cheshbon of Taisus, let's just go back to Taisus' kasha. Taisus' kasha is, why can't the Gemara be talking about a case where the husband threw the get, no one knows, was it closer to him or closer to her? Not because physically who was first, of course, but see, Shaila. No one knows, no one was watching. And that's the suffix. That was Taisus' kasha. So Taisus' answer was, you're right, it just doesn't fit into the words. But the mashmois of Taisus is, and we'll see the Beis Meir focus on this point, is that if we taka could have fitted into the Mishnah, it wouldn't be a problem. Meaning that could, in theory, be a real suffix. A suffix of a case where husband throws the get, We don't know, was it in her dalat amas or her dalat amas? We throw our hands up and say suffik, and then we call it migureshes v'ena migureshes. Comes along to Avni Meluim, and Avni Meluim says, no, not true. Says Avni Meluim, in number 10, this is Avni Meluim, Simon Lamed, he writes like this. Ulufize gabi get ki agavde besuffik kar of lo, loy have a get. It's not true. If the question is, was it closer to him or closer to her, it's not even a suffik. It's not a get at all. Kivin the guy beget lukuliyama being an edim al hashlichus lekabala. The Avni Meluim holds that you need to have edim on the shlichus. Meaning, you need to have edim saying that this is acting as my shliach. Let's say a man gives a get to a woman on the street. And the edim have no idea that this woman is a messenger for the wife. Says Avni Meluim, that's not a good get. Because as far as they're concerned, why is this a drop off of a nasam biyada? This is a piece of paper that he gave to a lady that's not his wife. And as far as we know, it's not a shlich of the wife. So this is meaningless. So that the meluim hold, by gerushin, not by kiddushin, by gerushin there's a din that the edim have to be aware of that this is a mocking for nesinas aget. So basically, says Avni Meluim, if that's the case, if the edim are watching here, and they themselves don't know karev law or karev law, says Avni Meluim, it's not even a suffic gerushin, it's a no gerushin. Because as far as the edim were concerned, it's like they didn't know was this get put to a place that can make a mice in
the
sina.
The edim aren't on the suffic.
The edim don't know.
Fair.
No, not oh. Trey. Okay. Back to Taisus's kasha. Taisus's kasha was, let's just say we're not sure if it was close to them or close to her. So obviously, the edim are also not sure. So says Avni Meluim, if the edim themselves are not sure, you have two edim. One edim said you're closer to him, one edim said closer to her. So what would have that case been? So Taisu says that would be a case of suffik. That would be Megureshes and Megureshes. Says Avni Meluim, no. That's edim Megureshes Vadai. Because as far as the edim are concerned, they did not see a Nesina to a Mokim that's able to be a Maisa Nesina. Because you have to know that this is, you have to know that the Dalet Amis is working as the Isha, for the Isha. Just like you have to know that the Shliach is working for the Isha. Therefore says Avni Meluim, that's the answer to Taisus' kasha. Taisus had a kasha. Why can't it be talking about a case where we're not sure if it was closer to her or closer to him? So Taisus said, you're right, it could have been, but it only doesn't fit into the words of the Mishnah. Says the Avni Meluim, no, it can't be pshat. Not because of the Mishnah, because it's not true. Because if you have a case where you're not sure if it was closer to him or closer to her, the Edom watching this did not see a Nesina to a Mokin, that's Vadai hers. And if you don't have Vadai Edas on the Shlichos...
One
Kat did. No, that's not two...
This is
No, this is two Edom. What, two Edom watching the story. One guy said, not two sets. Toysis' kash is one cat, machloik is in the cat. Each one's fighting about it, or each one's not sure.
Or
they don't know. They weren't aware. So says Avni Meluim, in such a case, you're left in a situation where you're lacking Edom on the appointment of the Dalet Amos, or of the Minoy Hashlichos. That's not a good get at all. Points at the base mayor, Toysis clearly disagrees. Because if Taisus held like this Avni Meluim, Taisus would have given a way better terrace that it doesn't fit into the words of the Mishnah. Right. To which the Mashiach has a follow-up kasha. So says the Beis Meir, clearly you see from Taisus, he disagrees with this premise of the Avni Meluim, which is really a Beis Shmuel. The Beis Shmuel makes this assumption. Beis Shmuel says, let's say you have a case of Kedushin. We have two Edom watching the Kedushin, and then they have an internal conflict. One Ed says closer to him, one Ed says closer to her. What do you do? So most people think that's a case of Suffolk Megureshes. So suffik. One eight says yeah, one eight says no, suffik.
Kedushin,
by Kedushin. By Kedushin.
Suffik,
suffik Kedushin, suffik Mekudesh. Says the Bishmul, that's not a suffik. That's lacking in Edom. If one eight doesn't know the story, or one eight is missing an integral part, so you don't have to Edom. That's a suffik in a Kedushin. That's not a suffik Mekudesh. Ve'en Mekudesh. That's nothing. So the Avni Meluim is following this idea of the Beis Shmuel. He's applying it to Gerushin. He's saying the same thing by Gerushin. If you don't know if this was an Asina Lerushasa, that's not a suffix between the two Edom.
That makes a lot of sense. Why would Tosfos disagree with you? You don't have Edom, then you're lacking
okay.
In Edom.
So I was trying to figure out if I wanted to get into the sugya or not. I'm still not sure if I want to deal with it. Maybe next week we'll talk a little more about what do you do with these questionable canes. This is always a shot we spoke about many times. We spoke about this by Kedushin. Let's say the husband gives the wife a ring, and the Edom watched the Nesina Satabas. And then later on, there's a shaila, was the tabas with a shavaprut. We talked about the shaila when we learned Kedushin. Reb Shimon has a piece about this also. We spoke about this once. The question is that felt, is that lacking in Eidei Kedushin? Do the Eidei Kedushin have to know the fact that the ring is worth that? Or they have to see the scene of Meshusel Rishusah and be Nisbar Achachach that Ataka was the shit? How much or what part do the Edom really need to see to be called Edei Kiyum? Okay, I was trying not to get involved in this.
The
chasanas is the first question they ask you. I always laugh when I'm an Edei, they ask me this question. I say, well, I'll tell you later. You have to tell you now. Okay, I'll tell you now. Yeah, it's probably with the Shavuot. Yeah, there was a story in Eretz Yisrael a few weeks ago where they got married and they realized that there's something wrong with the Tabas and they made Kedushin Friday night. like the Ramos says in Shulchan Aruch, you really could do. And they made such a ma'aseh with the tabas. Yeah, usually the shells don't come up. Usually the tabas is worth more than a pruta, and usually belongs to the husband. That's like the first question under the chuppah. They always ask the yeah, is it his? Is it worth more than a pruta? I always say, according to Ibshim, you can be mivad that later. You can ask me after. Ask me after the second dance if it's worth a pruta. I don't have to find that now. I'll figure it out later. But the ma'aseh, the minhag is not like that. But that's part of Ibshim's. Okay, we'll see if we'll talk more about the shayla of how to figure out what the role of the Eidim